似好似星星发光，看见看见看见看见心慌慌。他的眼光，他的眼光，好似好似星星发光，看见看见看见心更慌。
Welcome to Podcast on Fire 25, the Lam Ching Ying Bumper Pack. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me tonight, YouTube's very own Ken.
Hello.
And Green Fan DVD's Mike Banner.
Hello.
So, this is our Lam Ching Ying episode. It's going to be longer than our standard shows, with essential Lam Ching Ying movies discussed. We'll have past and future guests cut in to tell us their favourite Lam Ching Ying movies. And, of course, we'll have a brief history on Lam Ching Ying if you've no head of the guy. Going on over to our last movies watched as well, this time is going to be our last Lam movies watched. So, Mike?
Alright.
Okay, well, my last Lam movie watch would be Mr. Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
So now I checked this when I was at uni. We watched quite a lot of old school kung fu. Mm-hmm. It tended to be perfectly honest, in a haze of weed smoke and from behind a mountain of sticky buns and crisps. We used to watch a lot of the kung fu films. So, I mean, I saw quite a few flicks and just have no idea who was in them or what the titles were a lot of the time. You know, it just got
funny
put
as
on.
Fuck.
Yeah. So somebody brought around a random video or something where they had awesome dubbing and they could quote every line, that kind of stuff. And one of my friends at uni, he loved The Blade and quite a few films. And he went out, because he kept going on about Mr. Vampire that he'd seen before. And so we went on this mission to find it, eventually grabbed a VHS of it, and went back to uni and watched it. And at the time, I was kind of all, you know, I just want some kung fu, basically. I don't care about the storyline. So, I was disappointed when I first watched it. I didn't actually really like it that much. So, a good 10 years later, I thought it was time for a re-evaluation. Because, I mean, in the few years I've been collecting, I think my like knowledge base and tastes have changed. It's kind of, you know, grown up. So, yeah, put that on and watched it with my girlfriend. And I loved it. A really, really good quality, classic bit of Hong Kong comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Throws in some nice slapstick, a few good lines. Lots of kind of farce going on. Popping vampires, kung fu, some fantasy elements. It just throws everything into it.
Yeah.
And it comes out as feeling really kind of exuberant and energetic and kind of fresh and exciting. Hmm. And obviously, Lam Ching Ying is awesome in it. I think it was the start of obviously the Mr. Vampire kind of series. And obviously something, he was so good, and they were so popular, there was the beginning of his typecasting, wasn't it, really?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I mean, I don't know exactly how he felt, but from what I gather from rumours and stories around is that he wasn't, you know...
He must have enjoyed the role.
Well, yeah, he enjoyed the role, but, you know... I think he got a bit fed up of being typecast, as most actors seem to, who fall into this kind of, who happen to come back to the popular role again and again.
It went on for about, I guess, 7 or 8 years before the whole genre output faded. I mean, he did like a Mad Ghost in 1992, I think that's, and that wasn't a time where they made like 30 Hopping Vampire movies each year, so, but it was a good run of 6 or 7 years where it was sort of constant.
Well, the last thing he ever did was a Vampire Hunter TV series, wasn't it?
I didn't know that was several series.
Oh, okay.
I think he was filming the third one, wasn't he, when he found out he had liver cancer.
Mm-hmm.
if I remember rightly.
I didn't know that was after like 94, 95. I figured he did that during the popular years, I guess, but I've never looked it up.
I think it was 96.
Right.
Or 95, the first series came out, if I remember rightly. Mr. Vampire is definitely Lam Ching Ying's film in terms of, I think, what you remember about it and how he stands out in it. But he doesn't. He's not like he hogs the screen time.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of Moon Lee and Chin Su Ho and Ricky Hoi. I mean, a lot of it is Ricky Hoi and Chin Su Ho, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think really a lot now.
As well as him.
And Wu Ma pops up as well, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a little cameo over to the shop seller, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, he says rice.
But yeah, I think it's well known that it's a bit of an 80s Hong Kong classic.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of leaves, if you're going to review or talk about it, what do you do in terms of a fresh new angle on it? It's just a well-worn, well-loved classic.
Okay,
my regular last movie watched was, it's kind of a, in my life, on a similar theme, which is my girlfriend Jen's DVD collection that she's made me watch with her. You know, she's only really interested in Kanto films, and she's not really interested in Kung Fu.
Right.
So, you know, Mr. Vampire was, you know, my choice as well, but also happy coincidence that she really wanted to watch it. So then I got stuck into Carry On Hotel.
Right.
Which is, like, I don't know how to explain it. It's a farce, kind of like a British farce, which would be lots of characters, misunderstandings, people running around, sex jokes, that kind of stuff. Bit of embarrassment, humour. A cast list of lots of famous actors in small roles, sort of interconnecting. I mean, it's generally got no plot. It doesn't stick to like a three-act story arc, kind of like you'd expect from a film. So it's little kind of vignettes and bite-sized pieces of a film.
Mm-hmm.
The first section stars Kent Cheng as a detective who is out to record... I think he's out to record an affair, if I remember rightly. It's like a private detective.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't think there's really much story. He goes around looking stressed out, stealing people's beers at a bar and saying "fuck me" all the time. It's well over half a dozen times he says it. The first time it's funny, but then after that it gets a bit, alright mate, at least learn another English swear word. Then we roll on to Charlie Chin. Now, if you've ever seen Charlie Chin in, like, you know, Winners and Sinners, My Lucky Stars, you know almost exactly how he's going to be in this film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not, you know, well versed in the full filmography of Charlie Chin, but the only times I've ever seen him, he's playing what? I'll open this one up to a question. Ken, what's he normally playing?
Womanizer.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this one, he's coming out, he's having an affair with a married woman. They're in a hotel room, but there's cameras set up all in the room to record him. And this weird, there's like a three-man rock band who look like 80s idiots, you know, 80s film, it's hard to criticise them. But apparently, at least one of them was an actual Kanto pop singer, according to my girlfriend. And so they're sitting watching this on their telly. They kind of accidentally get through to the kind of the closed circuit kind of setup that's recording them, and so then all the people in the hotel end up into their room watching this on telly. And so Charlie Chin and his girl realise that they're being recorded, and so they played out this fake kind of soap opera for the cameras, and you know, in between they try and hide and feel each other up a bit. It's not particularly entertaining, and it's, you know, that is it. They do that for about 15-20 minutes. And then it's on to Richard Ng, who is mistaken for the Japanese businessman who's supposed to be turning up, the boss of the hotel chain, who's supposed to be turning up in Hong Kong to check out this hotel. And so the manager and all the staff are ready to suck up to him. And so Richard Ng pops in doing a little bit of a Lucky Stars kind of routine. You know the one where he's kind of... he's invisible. Well, he thinks he's invisible.
Yeah.
So he's pulling that kind of routine. It's not the same thing, but he thinks he can hypnotize people and use his power of suggestion to get them to do what he likes. Because he walks in and obviously they're ready to suck up to him, thinking he's the Japanese guy. So whenever he tries this skill out, they all do it for him. Whatever he asks. But really, he's out to try and rob the place using his reading through his book of ninja techniques. And in one scene, he goes to rob one of the apartments in the hotel, which has got this kind of weird sentient computer defense system, like HAL from 2001 Space Odyssey or something. And he's kind of having a conversation with it at the time and robbing the place. And then he gets trapped in, but he tricks the computer into letting him out. I'd have to say that is definitely the most entertaining part of the film, is Richard Ng, because he's a funny guy. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
A good physical comedian. And the biggest laugh I had in the whole film was a really neat kind of visual joke where he's grabbed by the collar in his coat, but he kind of walks straight out of the coat, seemingly, without even like moving his arms. He just pops out the end of the coat, which I thought was really cool.
It sounds almost like a Marx Brothers joke when I hear that sort of.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. So that's definitely the best bit. And then there's Eric, a really young-looking Eric Tsang, kind of as some kind of tour rep, being attacked by two crazy women with knives, where he's running around his hotel room and hiding while they're trying to slice him up. But in the end, they end up all sitting around a table. While the women take turns playing that knife game that I remember vividly from Aliens, where they've got the knife and they're chopping it in between the fingers, and they're doing it to him and stuff. And
and we which were the two women?
Well, now you're asking a question. You know what? I can't remember.
Pat-ha and Sherry Chung.
Yeah. Pat-ha,
okay, we'll go with that. Yeah, I'm definitely sure though, it's Cherry Chung.
Yeah, it probably is. Pat-ha, definitely. Once again, it's not very funny. Personally, there's a little bit of a kind of a horror thriller element into the how it's made, which is, you know, it's quite well done, but I don't know, really forgettable. And then the last one is quite possibly the worst section, which is Jackie Jung trying to cop off with Joey Wong. Now, you might be able to help me out here, Ken. Who's the girl who dresses a boy who's really in love with him, but he can't see it?
Cecilia Yip.
There we go. Cecilia Yip. You know, looking really hot, but just with like her hair tied back, well, wearing a cap and in a boiler suit. Like he couldn't see that she was really hot or something, just because she's a bit grubby. But anyway, yeah, he's all over things with a completely unbelievable 5-second change of heart, which makes no sense whatsoever, but, you know, makes a nice happy end for the film. And it's I don't know, I think actually recounting it was more entertaining than watching it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds fun.
Yeah, it's not. I just don't think it's funny. I mean, my girlfriend was saying it was funny, and she speaks Cantonese, so she ain't going to miss any of the jokes. And she laughed like twice. And it wasn't even a belly laugh, it was just a ha 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 kind of titter. I think it's just because she like really likes Jackie Jung, especially as a singer. She's a big fan of his. I think that's the only reason she really actually... she was blinded by the Jackiness. But, I mean, it's directed by Jeff Lau, who He's done quite a few Stephen Chow films, like The Chinese Odyssey and Out of the Dark and stuff, which has got some really funny bits in, and you think, looking at
He knows energy, Jeff Lau. I've always noticed that about him. At his best, he can direct great comedic energy. Certainly evident in Chinese Odyssey, and also the first Haunted Cop Shop film, and the beginning of the second Haunted Cop Shop film. That's Jeff Lau at his best. It's bam, 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 boom, boom, boom. Just moves fast, and it's funny as hell.
Yeah, so, I mean, putting that in mind as well, I was very disappointed with Carrion Hotel.
No. Well.
Also, strangely, on the video, on the DVD cover, I think it's a Megastar DVD.
Maya.
Is it Maya? By the way, there's a list of the cast on there, like you got Jackie Chung, Sherry Chung and stuff. No Richard Ng. On the cast list on the front, which I found a bit weird, seeing as he's got one of the best and the biggest chunk of the film. But hey, that's a side note. And I'm just reading here as well. It says it's a Singaporean hotel. So I correct my assumption that it was a Hong Kong hotel.
For whatever reason.
Yeah. So that's me done on that one. I would suggest don't bother watching it.
Aww. So for me, I would stay in order. I watched them. At the weekend, I managed to watch Chinatown Kid. That's a short film.
Shaw Brothers.
Oh, I know.
It's the actual first week where Mike actually doesn't do a Shaw Brothers film, and I do one.
As long as somebody's keeping the flame alive. It's like carrying the Olympic torch or something.
Well, directed by Chang Che in the late 70s, it stars Fu Sheng and Sun Qian. Basically, it's two very different people, both with very different backstories, and both of them trying to basically live the dream in America. But with it being a Shaw Brothers movie, it isn't easy. So.
Well, which version did you watch? Did you watch the IVL Hong Kong one?
I think it was I.
Because there's, a big thing on the internet about the endings of the international cut. Well, I mean, I think it's most of the film, but specifically the ending of the international cut compared to the Hong Kong cut.
Well, I think with the way this one ended, it was basically just a big message saying, don't do drugs! And if you don't, you'll, get a scholar at Harvard. And yay! Basically, don't do drugs and you'll succeed in life. That's what it felt like by the end of it, just a big, say no message.
Yeah, well, I haven't actually watched it yet.
Oh, I wasn't surprised by that one.
Yeah, well, it's kind of because of the cut status of it. I was hoping that, somebody in America or somebody might actually pick it up and try and knock out a proper uncut version.
So what would the alternative ending be?
Well, one of them is supposed to be kind of bloody and depressing, and one of them is kind of more of a happy ending.
Well, it must be the happy ending on.
Yeah, I think it might be the international cut that's got more violence in it.
Mm-hmm. No one was really happy with the Hong Kong DVD, so that certainly confirms it as well.
Well, I imagine it, American distributors would be like, fuck the moral, let's get more blood. See, now, I really do want to watch it, though, because I'm a big fan of Fu Sheng and Sun Qian as well, who I think, along with Lo Meng, were the best two actors in the Venoms gang. I think Lo Meng was a bit more kind of, basically just did one role, pretty much, but he was excellent at it. Whereas I think Sun Qian, a little bit more variation in what he could do.
Well, it's got a good cast. It has got Lo Meng, Philip Kwok, as well as Wang Lungwei.
Wait a minute. Is Wang Lungwei a goodie?
Baddie.
Oh, what a surprise.
And a stash?
Yep.
Yep.
Sweet. I've just basically given him a suit and a flashy watch. But it was fun. Oh, I also had a very short appearance for Dick Wei.
Another badass. Well known for not pulling his punches or kicks in screen fights.
But, yeah, it was a fun film. I watched it. I enjoyed it. Let's move on. My last Lam Ching Ying movie watched was Crazy Safari. Crazy Safari was made in 1991 with Billy Chan as director. The story starts off in England, where a Taoist priest, Lam Ching Ying, has been hired by a young rich kid to transport his great ancestor, the portly Peter Chan, back to Hong Kong. But on the flight home, they end up being stuck in Africa, and what's worse is they've lost their ancestor. So once in Africa, they're united with a African bushman, and that's basically Hong Kong's only bushman, Naizu. This brings in the subplot of the local bush tribe being hassled by snot-nosed Americans who are attempting to steal rare diamonds from the bush tribe, and basically let the crazy safari begin. I did think it was a good wee film. They went, you actually expect the film to be in Africa. You're expecting, okay, they're just basically going to show you, like, shot of a monkey or, like, a distance shot of a rhino just grazing. But no, they flung in...
Stockfoot.
Mm-hmm. But they ended up throwing in, at, like, 8 to 10 different animals at Lam Ching Ying. Had him riding an ostrich, like... Had him knee deep in an anaconda. This, that, and the next thing. But I think it's one of those films you definitely need to kind of look out for, because there's no really any other film out there that's like it.
Yeah, it was always fun. I think the Gods Must Be Crazy move is that this Bushman actor, I guess we should call him, starting. They were only a few years old at this point. I think this even was maybe internationally known as either like part 3 or 4 in the God Must Be Crazy series. And let's say if it was 3, then part 4 was the other Hong Kong movie he was in called originally Crazy Hong Kong, starring Lau Ching Wan.
Yeah,
it's I love it because it's a change of vibe, obviously, to the genre. You know, it's not your usual like blue lit on a Golden Harvest stage hopping vampire flick where they're trying to hold their breath while hiding from a vampire 90 minutes of that. The setting allows it to be more crazy than Hong Kong could do on home grounds, speaking of the animals alone.
Yeah.
And there's a few surprises in the film that shouldn't be revealed, but without revealing anything, I guess you can figure out what the ending real highlight is.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was...
That's a wonderful surprise to keep intact for people trying to see this movie. And I believe now it's again available, although it's still on VCD. So I think it's part of like the Fortune Star library that Joy Sales is putting out, albeit on VCD, which is kind of a shame because the movie is also notable for actually being like
narrated.
It's narrated by Stephen Chow and Ma Dak. And I think from what I could understand, they like provide audio subtitling, I guess, narration for the Bushman segments.
Yes.
Which is basically not in Cantonese. And, so it would be fun to sort of know if they provide a sort of an extra added bonus of enjoyment. But the VCD is not subtitled in English during those segments. So if it ever comes out on DVD, hopefully someone will make sure the Stephen Chow segments are subtitled.
Mm-hmm. It would make sense, really.
It's not a given thing, though. I mean, this was like it was on the cinema print, presumably. So it's just that either something that they forgot in a year where probably a lot of movies were made, including hopping vampire movies, or they just, you know, it's Hong Kong. It's like this. They just move on and leave it as it is. And I obviously not thinking, you know, priority one is non-speaking Cantonese audience. It's okay. It's still okay.
Yeah.
So if this is Gods Must Be Crazy 3. What are the other two it. Like? And, you know, is Lam Ching Ying in the other two?
He's only in Crazy Safari.
Have you seen the other two?
No, but I think they actually have a DVD release somewhere.
The fourth one, which is Crazy Hong Kong, which is the Bushman going to the city, basically. And, you know, fish out of water, and he's led around in some shape or form by Lao Ching Wan. That is on DVD, but I think it's a Taiwan DVD, dubbed in Mandarin, which is unfortunate in the case of this film, because it's one of those rare cases where an early 90s comedy is in sync sound. Mm-hmm. So I would rather try that out in Cantonese. But amongst the two Hong Kong co-production that the part 3 and 4 was, I think Crazy Safari always has the room of etching out Crazy Hong Kong easily. Crazy Hong Kong is sort of a standard comedy. And the first two, so I guess they were, excuse me if I'm wrong, but I guess they were South African productions, the first two movies. I only remember seeing the first one and a little of two, but they weren't like, they didn't have Lam Ching Ying riding an ostrich, therefore not as memorable. Not imprinted in your brain.
Well, the series seems to have got some good actors in it. Which seems like a cheap, slightly weird B set of B movies, but some good talent in it from what I've seen so far. Anyway, like Chang Pei Pei, Kent Cheng, Cynthia Khan in the in Gods Must Be, well, it Gods Must Be Crazy 5, and obviously Lam Ching Ying in the other one.
I'm not keeping track of this series, as it turns out, even though it doesn't really matter. But I didn't think there was a fifth one, and I wonder if Crazy Safari is the third. Maybe they made a fourth South African production and then back to Hong Kong for 5, but again, it's international titles. Hong Kong kept like the Gods Must Be Crazy title off their domestic prints, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's the Gods Must Be Funny in China is the fifth one, so I'm guessing it's the Bushman but in China instead of Hong Kong.
Yeah, they tried to milk that for all that it was worth, and I guess 5 movies with the Little Bushman was enough to make some people a few dollars.
Do you reckon he got paid?
I don't know if he was exploited or not, or if he was really, really smart. I have no idea. I haven't read any biography on him. But yeah, it's one he got insanely popular though. For a short while, anyway. So the Lam Ching Ying movie I watched is sort of, it makes sense that I'm bringing this kind of effort to you. It's a movie called Lover's Tear, which is essentially a drama made in 1991, directed by Jacob Chung, the Battle of Wits director, and also did Cage Man and The Kid. And it's a drama vehicle for a bunch of people that didn't necessarily get any chance to do drama. Sammo Hung, Lam Ching Ying, Ku Fung, Wu Ma, Elvis Choi, Nai Sing, Nina Lee Chi, and Yukari Oshima. And the plot is about Nai Sing. He plays a public security officer, and he's framed for a murder of another officer played by Yukari Oshima, and he manages to flee cuffed to the only witness in his favor, which is a deaf woman called Ling, who is played by Nina Lee, and she is also the mistress of a gangster played by Elvis Choi. So as they take refuge and are on the hunt, they sort of start to develop feelings for each other. And it's unusually complex and moving considering all the personnel involved, and obviously that was the intention of director Jacob Chung, who probably knew that these veterans had proven their worth in dramas such as Painted Faces, School on Fire, Hong Kong 1941, in reference to Wu Ma's supporting performance in that film. And it is a mixture between action and drama, and it references slightly on this Tony Curtis, Sidney Poitier movie called The Defiant Ones, in terms of two characters being cuffed together. And I've always liked it because it's Lam Ching Ying specifically plays a deaf hitman, so he obviously hasn't got any lines, but they treat this opportunity very well. They live up to this opportunity to be directed by a good drama director and sort of come through with very subtle performances and very felt performances within sort of an action drama. And it's a very good film, but the major but of the film is that the sole performer that doesn't really come through with a surprising and unusual good performance is Nai Singh. Mm-hmm. So it seems it's a bit too much to rely on him as a leading man and a leading romantic lead as well. But it still means that it is an underrated film for the performances put in by specifically Nina Lee, Lam Ching Ying, and also Elvis Choi. And in particular the ending, which I won't spoil, but they're all exceptionally strong in the ending, and it's very tightly directed, and it is definitely underrated and something to look for if you can't find it, because it's not been widely released ever since Laserdiscs and tape and VCD. So the last movie I watched was Stanley Kwan's Center Stage, which was actually sort of a rewatch, because finally this movie, which is a biography of a famous silent movie actress called Ran Lingyu, who is played by Maggie Cheung in this film, she was famous for having a very short career. She took a life at the age of 25, and I believe that was in 1935, and left behind a letter basically condemning the public and journalists for sort of ruining her life with, I believe the words were, malicious gossip. And Center Stage had always had a problematic fate on home video, because originally it is 2.5 hours long, but when they were going to sort of squeeze this onto a Laserdisc, they thought 2.5 hours is way too long. We only want to spend money on 2 Laserdiscs, so we'll just cut 30 minutes out of it. And that was the version that was available for the longest of time, until Fortune Star remastered the film. And having watched it, Stanley Kwan doesn't make fast movies. He's made Rouge and for instance, which is his most famous film. It's slow style. It's not art house style, but it's very slow and often hypnotic. And it can be applied to Center Stage when focusing only on the Maggie Cheung character. Outside of that, there's for me a lot of issues about the political climate of the time and the movie making climate of the time that doesn't really reach me, but it doesn't really matter, because the story of this actress is so strong that it's sort of okay to only appreciate that, because you sort of question why she took her life based on only gossip. But it's sort of it's an intriguing movie to watch to sort of make up your mind whether or not she was stupid or really did the right thing in terms of the really main reason why she killed herself was that the press revealed that she had another man while her prior marriage was still going on, so it wasn't settled legally yet, so that was too much of a scandal. What's revealed in the longer cut is actually a conscious decision to sort of blend documentary footage and fiction, basically. So there's in the short cut, you saw a lot of interview footage with Maggie Cheung and Karina Lau, conducted by Stanley Kwan, the director. In the longer cut, you see even more of this. You see Chin Han being interviewed, you see Tony Leung Ga-fai being interviewed, and more with Lawrence. But the main thing that's expanded on is you see almost staged behind the scenes footage of the making of Center Stage. They are filming the actual filming of the scenes, which seems like a sort of a strange choice that I'm not really sure why Stanley Kwan did this. Mm-hmm. Because even at the funeral scene of the character she plays, there's like they cut to say, well, I can see Maggie breathing, can we do that again? And it's they break the wall in a strange way. I'm not really sure why, but it is still much preferable to watch this film at longer length, because I think on a conscious level and on a subconscious level, you sort of know and feel that there's more depth now. And a few things that I thought was unclear when first watching it a few years ago was clear to me now. So the added 30 minutes or so is helpful. And if you want to start with Stanley Kwan movies, I suggest you watch Rouge first. Because it sort of gets you adjusted to the kind of slow hypnotic style that he employs, and center stage could be, you know, if you want to have a taste of that, you can do that as your second or third Stanley Kwan movie.
Mm-hmm. Hello, my name's James Howell. I'm the host of POS 21. My favorite Lamb movie is Mr. Vampire 3.
So for the people who aren't actually familiar with Lam Ching Ying, we've got this brief summary, well, basically a brief history on Lam Ching Ying. So, to start it off, born in December 1952 in Shanghai, in 1963 he joined the other Peking Opera School in Hong Kong, that of Madame Fan Fok Fa, the rival of Yu Jimmy Yun, where Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung were trained around the same time. In actuality, the schools were friends, and the students from both schools often mingled. At 17, Lam became a stuntman and martial arts coach at Shaw Brothers Studio. Due to his slender build, he was often called upon to substitute female actors. At 19, he was handpicked by Bruce Lee for the role as an assistant action director on The Big Boss. After The Big Boss, Lam continued to work with Lee until Lee's death. Lam later joined Sammo Hung's stuntman association, known as the Hung Karpan.
Moving on to the 80s, in 1982, Lam Ching Ying won the Hong Kong Film Award for Best Action Direction in the film, the classic, Prodigal Son. Prodigal Son featured what is probably widely acknowledged as amongst the best Wing Chun caught on film performed by Lam. He also underlined his acting talent by convincingly playing a frail elderly Taoist priest in The Dead of the Deadly, which is, as an aside, forever my favorite image of Lam, because frail and elderly doesn't really do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in The Dead of the Deadly. But Lam Ching Ying's star did not rise really until 1985, until the release of Mr. Vampire, the movie that fueled the hopping vampire genre. And he was nominated for Best Actor for his role as the Taoist priest. And this character was an engaging mixture of naivety and stoic authority, and became a favorite for audiences around the world, really. And Lam reprised his role many times throughout his career.
Okay, the success of Mr. Vampire eventually became burdensome on Lam. He found himself typecast in a similar role, which is obviously a fate that befalls a lot of actors who become successful, or particularly successful for in a certain movie. As the hopping vampire genre began to lose its popularity, the roles began to dry up, and aside from small roles in The Swordsman and a supporting role in Pom Pom and Hot Hot, which is an awesome title,
mm-hmm,
most of his roles were in low-budget movies. Lam also briefly became a director in the film Green Hornet. Also, did he direct Vampire vs. Vampire as well?
Yeah,
that is correct. Yes, that was his first directed film, and a rather good entry in the hopping vampire genre, because he actually made like the concept of a kid hopping vampire not annoying, as opposed to what it was like in Mr. Vampire 2. I think the little kid hopping vampire in Vampire versus Vampire is totally adorable.
Yeah, it's tough to make children in films not annoying, I find.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right, in 1995, Lam was offered the starring role in a TV series called Vampire Expert. Not a big shock. And this was shown on ATV, which is a rival to TVB. Is ATV still going?
Don't know.
I don't know either.
I have no insight in television stations.
Could be, but I was always told, or maybe, you know, misinformed, that ATV was kind of cheaper and crappier version of TVB. Anyway, the series was a big success for Lam and helped revive his career. It moved straight into a second series in 96, and in 97 it began production on the third series, but unfortunately the production was halted when Lam found out he had liver cancer. And contrary to some rumours that circulated, it wasn't caused by heavy drinking, but it was hereditary. And on November the 8th, 1997, Lam unfortunately died at St. Teresa's Hospital in Hong Kong.
I still remember that time, even though I was not like far into my early Hong Kong cycle, because he already made like an early impression on me. And I think it surprised many people due to the fact that he really did keep this from the public, and even to like some of his closer friends and people who he had worked with. And I guess that goes in line with the fact that he was not like a spotlight whore as such. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to keep it like dignified in some way.
Yep, and full credit of this goes towards Wikipedia for the source of the information, and you could also go to their page and they'll have a lot more detail than what we've just given you the brief here.
Okay, hi everyone, my name's Chris Jones. My favourite Lam Ching Yung movie has to be Prodigal Son, probably because it was the first movie I've ever picked up with him involved in. And after that I went on to watch the Mr. Vampire movies, and I'd say that Mr. Vampire is also one of my favourites as well.
Now we're moving on to our essential Lam Ching Yung movies. This is us giving you basically our top 5 essential Lam Ching Yung films to check out.
Okay, Prodigal Son, from 1981, directed by Sammo. A rich man's son, Yuen Biu, believes himself to be the best kung fu fighter in Canton. Unfortunately, his father, who's anxious for his son's safety, bribes all his opponents to lose. So after a humiliating defeat at the hands of an actor, which is Lam Ching Yung, in a travelling theatre company, the son resolves to find a better teacher. And as I just mentioned, Lam Ching Yung in this one plays the teacher, Lung Yi Tai.
Isn't that like a real known Wing Chun practitioner of some sort?
Think so.
Well, Yuen Biu's character is.
Right.
I know that much. I'm not sure if his teacher in the film, Lung Yi Tai, was a real figure or not. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, he was certainly not the one that originated the Wing Chun. All I know is that it was originated by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly a nun, maybe, is what I'd heard.
Right.
Some facts about it can be disputed, I think. Mm. Okay. See, this film reminds me of Lau Ga Lung.
Ow.
It depends on if you've watched many Lau Ga Lung films, but a lot of his style is really centered around martial arts. It's not like a frivolous action film with martial arts tacked on, or a comedy with martial arts tacked on. A lot of it is focused on techniques and the history and the art of it and all kinds of things. A real love of the martial art itself and of martial arts in general. And a lot of the time, I think in certain films, especially something like Legendary Weapons of China, the end of that is just a massive demonstration of Chinese kung fu weapons, with like the name of it popping on, and him and his brother just going at it with all kinds of weapons, and it kind of feels like you're being entertained and you're learning at the same time. Prodigal Son feels to me like the Golden Harvest version of that. It feels like a total lesson in Wing Chun, as well as being a massively entertaining film. And obviously, at the heart of it is Lam Ching Yung as the master. I think is his best role, and it's got all kinds of things going on. It allows him some get play where he plays a lot of Peking opera in it, which obviously he would have been trained for from a young age. And he gets to show Wing Chun lots of awesome fight scenes. He gets to be like a stoic, you know, hard-nosed master.
Mm-hmm.
But also gets a bit of comedy, and he just gets to full, show the full repertoire, it feels like, in that film.
Hmm.
And he's just amazing all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I felt like I was learning about Wing Chun. It's like edutainment or something, but in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't actually keep it all to like basically like a strict kung fu film. Like they basically added Sammo Hung just to almost camping it up. Because I think the funny thing about this film was both the notable looks of Lam Ching Ying and Sammo in this movie, they looked completely different. How Lam Ching Ying's always known for like the one eyebrow. Heck, he's not even got an eyebrow in this movie.
Yeah, he shaved. Well, he has his tail, of course, but he's very bald.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but, well, he's I don't ever mention this, but he's a female impersonator, isn't he, in the film?
Yeah.
His character is, which is why I'm guessing he's pretty hairless. Well, one reason for that, the character anyway.
Even he even beats up Yun Bu in the Peking Opera makeup anyway, not in the full gear. But
mm-hmm.
So that's a little something. I think that scene was for some reason cut from some DVD versions of the film. The whole Peking Opera fight that destroys Yun Bu's imaginary confidence.
Because they couldn't handle fighting and singing at the same time.
Yeah, I think it was cut for like international prints of the film.
Yeah.
And the English dub of the film, because they couldn't really understand or felt it was necessary to have that. In retrospect, that's a total retarded decision. Because it's super important to have that fight the way it plays out and stuff. But yeah, it's cultural differences. It always gets... it can be the victim many times of the scissors.
I always remember Prodigal Son as basically being one of the, I would think maybe one of my first martial, like real old period martial art films from Golden Harvest, because before I would either be watching the Bruce Lee films and then it would be Jackie films, but this was before I'd seen Snake and Eagle, Shadow, and Drunken Master. So when I actually got this, I was really excited about seeing it, and it was it. Like, I think it was an hour and a half, just flew by.
Yeah. It's more cinema than most even classic martial arts ever was. I mean, speaking of Snake in Eagle Shadow and Drunken Master, which are totally good films, classic films, but not much cinema behind that. I mean, Prodigal Son is sort of it has enough for to make it like, you know, it's not an excuse to have fights in there. And it's sort of, you know, Sammo, who directed it, of course, he focuses quite a bit on making like a real movie. And mm-hmm. you know, as Mike pointed out, it being educational sort of works alongside that, because you can educate as much as you want, but you need like a compelling package at the same time. And there's and I agree that movie just flies by each and every time. And even though it's like a comedy and a lot of things at the same time, it really makes sense the way Sammo introduces comedy, especially when he introduces himself. Which is, I think, is the Wong Fei Hung theme song is playing underneath Sammo's introduction, and he mm-hmm. takes it into some fine comedic places after that. I think he does calligraphy during that first scene.
Yeah. So coming back to me now.
Who's the person? Is it himself he draws? I can't remember now.
Yeah, he starts drawing like a little plant of some sort, and then he continues, and when they reveal the whole paper, he actually has drawn himself a real like a big smiling cartoon version of himself, and the actual written calligraphy says something about I don't remember it verbatim, but it's something about daddy. He draws it in front of his daughter, and it sort of evolves because you think, oh, nice calligraphy, real classy. And then it like turns into bow, wow, wow, wow.
Yeah.
That's the final comedic effect.
That is a great intro scene for Samo.
Yeah, he jumps.
His character, I think it's excellent.
And then Lam Ching Ying gets introduced, and they're like, are they actual brothers or Kung Fu brothers? They obviously have a rivalry going on either way. Does anybody remember their relationship?
I think it was Kung Fu brothers, because I think it got to a point where there something came between them to basically split them up, but
they have different views on Wing Chun, and mm-hmm. both views are kind of effective, even though Yu Mu never uses like the toilet kung fu or toilet stance in the end fight. Mm-hmm. He never uses that, but I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's a chemistry between Lam Ching Ying and Sammo Hung as well, and Yu Mu, you know, evolving into it's dead on perfect, that film. I can't really find any flaw with it, and not anyone I can think of anyway. I mean, I'm not against the violence that it presents either, because it mm-hmm. contains harsh violence. Yeah, it's a perfect Hong Kong movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I think it is a perfect kung fu film.
I saw Warriors 2 before Prodigal Son. Warriors 2 being like made four or five years earlier, and also it's like an educational Wing Chun film.
Yeah.
More uneven though, but I've always had a soft spot for Warriors 2. I mean, I watched it early on, again in my Hong Kong cycle, and sort of a, you know, Dean Sheck may piss his pants, but I still watch that scene to this day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a soft spot for it, and Casanova Wong obviously being great, and Lam Ching Ying probably in the background in that film, maybe.
Yeah.
I haven't spotted him, but I wouldn't be too... I mean, I haven't got the credits in front of me, but I wouldn't be too surprised if he was involved in the action choreography.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure him, Yimbu, and Mars were basically the background thugs that get taken out of one move, then reappear later on as a different background thug.
Yeah. But by then, by 1981, 1982, they all had graduated to fine degree. Speaking of like early summer flicks, that Knockabout, was Lam Ching Ying in that, in sort of a, or was it just a background play in that, if that?
I think he was a background player in it. I've not got anything up in front of me, but I think he did have something to do maybe with the choreography.
Right. I was just thinking if maybe they tried to bring him out slowly but surely in a way, or that's just the way it happened, sort of.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember Lam Ching Ying having a significant part in Knockabout. Not like
It was Sammo's and Yu Mu's film, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's the magic of Sammo. I mean, he brought sort of a bona fide breakthrough in Yu Mu via Knockabout, and unless I'm not thinking of another film before Prodigal Son, then that's sort of, you know, he brought Lam Ching Ying to.
Lam Ching Ying was a background player in that. I think there was a casino fight. I really need to watch Knockabout again, but I think there was one point where there's a fight in the casino and you could see him being kicked around.
Right. But it's not a speaking part, not a supporting part or anything like that.
No.
Right. I remember him getting kicked about in Hapkido as well.
Yeah.
Poor guys.
Sammo and Jackie, you know, well, Sammo had a big part in Hapkido, obviously, but yeah. You can spot Lam Ching Ying as a background thug. And probably a few more times as well.
Mm-hmm.
And really Big Boss, obviously. You can see him a bunch of times there.
Well, what I was about to say about Lam Ching Ying as well, something that I think he doesn't get a lot of credit for, is his work as an action choreographer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you know, you're saying he came along slowly. I think that's because, you know, he was behind the scenes a lot, working on the choreo and part of a stunt team, and obviously getting his ass handed to him by Angela Mao and other people.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, started off that way a bit like Yu Mu did, and then made the leap up, because I mean, there's a lot of films, obviously you work with Sammo on a lot of them, but a lot of them have got some seriously good action that he's been involved in as action choreographer, like Two Toothless Tigers, The Victim.
Mm-hmm.
What else? the Lucky Stars films have always got really good action in.
Yeah.
I think he deserves a bit of extra credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, normally, I guess the whole association got credits on those films, or at least during the 80s, during some movies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'll just check it here. He's actually credited as one of the assistant action directors for Knockabout.
Right.
As well, obviously, I'm not sure. Did he solo action direct any films?
Maybe be hopping vampire films now and then.
Because I know he's obviously part of the Sammo team, so he kind of got overshadowed because, you know, it's Sammo.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the reason maybe why like, he doesn't get a lot of credit.
Yeah, on occasion, as I said, the hopping vampire films, maybe Her Vengeance as well.
Lover's Tear.
Yeah, Lover's Tear definitely did action direct, at least according to the Hong Kong Movie Database.
Mm-hmm.
He was solely action direct on that, mostly gunplay.
Yeah.
A few scraps, too.
Hello there. I am the Canadian web monkey, Jeff Wildman. You may know me as a contributor to HKC UK and occasionally on Podcast on Fire. And hopefully we'll be on more in the future. Lam Ching Ying, picking my favorite moment for him is hard for two reasons. One being that he has been in so many great films. Second being that I unfortunately have not seen a lot of the great films he has been in. Aside from a lot of his small roles as villains and, you know, his quick moments here and there, it's really hard to think of what I would have to pick as my favorite moment from what I have seen. The Mr. Vampire series seems a bit too obvious, so I'm going to have to stretch a little further and say Painted Faces. A brilliant dramatic role that he was in as a former Peking opera star turned forgotten stuntman. It's a really touching role. It's not a big one, but I would have to say that would be the most memorable one that I've seen him in. Thank you.
The second in our list of essential Lam Ching Ying movies is the Ricky Lau Mr. Vampire movie, which was directed in 1995. The story to this one was during a reburial, the local Taoist priest notices that the corpse has not decomposed and has blue fingernails, typical symptoms of a hopping vampire. Before he could destroy the vampire, it escapes. Ah. Now he must deal with the menace, aided only by his bumbling assistants, played by Chin Soo Ho and Ricky Hoi. One of them, who becomes soon infected by the vampire's poison, whilst another is enjoying the embrace of a life-eaten succubus. And Lam Ching Ying plays the role which basically did shoot him to stardom, the role of the Taoist priest, Master Ko.
One thing I was thinking about, if someone has the time, I certainly don't, check if for some reason he was like Master Ko in like a bunch of films, like Jackie Chan, always was like same character.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it matters, but you know, it's a fun thing for someone to do.
Yeah.
Like play, or it was just Sifu in like 20 movies after this.
I think most of the time it was Sifu, just like how Sammo Hung was always Fatty. Poor Sammo. But yeah, Mr. Vampire, this was one of the films I wanted to get like from the get-go after seeing the trailer from it on the old Hong Kong legend discs. And I was like, after seeing this, I want to see that film. I've not a fucking clue why those guys are hopping, but I want to see that film.
Mm-hmm. But it certainly caught the imagination of the world, really.
Mm-hmm.
See, I can't remember what I babbled on about last time when I spoke about this is my last Lam Ching Ying film watched.
Don't you mean earlier this evening?
Well, Yes, earlier this evening.
Back indeed. In 1985 when we first recorded this. Before iPods and podcasts.
Mm-hmm. But something that just popped into my head, I don't think I mentioned earlier this evening, was, is it just me, or does Ricky Hoy look about like 20 years too old to be like the bumbling assistant?
It does have an offy-aged face about him.
It's a bit like Jackie being like Wong Fei Hung in Drunken Master 2.
Mm-hmm.
He's like about 5 years younger than T-Lung.
Well, just the Ed Wood quote that pops up in my head, and it works. Filmmaking is not about the tiny details, it's about the big picture. It really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Unless you actually are bothered by it every time you watch Mr. Vampire Mike.
Well, no, it's just, you know, I really enjoyed the film, obviously, and I really enjoyed Ricky Hoy's performance in it, but, you know, just when he's on screen, for at least the first, like, 10 to 15 minutes or whatever, thinking he looks a little bit old to me.
but seriously. But I think the reason it works though is because in the trio, in the Hoy brothers trio, we obviously being Michael and Sam, Ricky is sort of always the underdog in a way. He's not really the extrovert of that trio, and so it sort of works that he's growing older. You know, his physical appearance does grow older, but he's still a little bit of a child inside. So I think he always plays to that thing. I mean, there's not many movies that he's made, especially with his brothers, that he's like the big, strong character who's going to show his other brothers who's the man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the Private Eyes, he has like his neck brace throughout the film, and he looks about the same in the Private Eyes, which I think it's 7 or 8 years earlier than Mr. Vampire.
But I think one of the good things about this film, it also kind of introduced me to Chin Soo-ho. And basically, after seeing Mr. Vampire, I eventually went on to collect the rest of the series. Well, the ones that went under the title Mr. Vampire 2, Mr. Vampire 3, then the Mr. Vampire Saga 4.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Which Lam Ching-ying was
that,
by the way?
That one did include Lam Ching-ying. But actually included Anthony Chan, who was briefly in Mr. Vampire. So it sort of felt like this movie went the other direction. And that happened to include Chin Soo Ho's younger brother, Chin Carlock. So it was almost made up of people who have been in the series already, with having Wu Ma in it as well. And Chung Fat.
Yeah.
But I loved the series. I could sit and watch them on just heavy rotation.
Yeah, even four. I mean, I don't think many movies. The only weak one, I think, because it's the second one, Mr. Vampire 2. It sort of tries a few different things, which is not a bad thing, but it also it's kind of boring. Lam Ching-ying is like reduced to a supporting player only, but I appreciate that they tried something, then bounced back with 3 and 4. And Ricky Lauer directed all of these films, even the Mr. Vampire in 1992, which was, I guess,
the
fifth official, unofficial, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. It was almost like the Mr. Vampire reunion, because
it
basically had most of the original cast back in it, with basically the trio of Lam Ching-ying, I was going to say Man Choi, Ricky Hoy and Chin Soo-ho. I think this time they had, they actually had Billy Lau as well.
Yeah.
And I think they had Sandra too. More when she was in her goofy phase.
Yeah, she tried to seduce Lam Ching-ying in that film. Yeah, hooray. Hooray for him.
Yes.
He didn't like it. I mean, when Mr. Vampire first turned up, many people had not seen like a hopping vampire movie, but like as the libraries of Golden Harvest and Shaw Brothers opened up, you could like track a development up till Mr. Vampire, starting with Lau Garlung in, what was it, 1975 with The Spiritual Boxer? Which didn't have like a lot of hopping vampires, but it was kung fu comedy mixed in with a typical Hong Kong horror angle, which was new at that point. also evident in the rather boring sequel to Spiritual Boxer called Shadow Boxing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the lesser Lau Garlong films, actually. And but also like the other Sammo Hung classic, Encounters of the Spooky Kind in 1980, got a few vampires into the mix, some decaying vampires too. So it was actual horror for a bit, although it was played for laughs as well. And Lam Ching Ying plays a village policeman who is not very prone to listening to Sammo Hung's actual truth being spoken. He's a very stubborn guy. Has some wonderful comedic sequences in Encounters of the Spooky Kind. You remember when he opens the casket with the rotting corpse? You know he's a brave policeman in front of his men. He's going to look into the casket, closes his eyes, closes the casket, and then that reaction to his men. Wow! That was terrific. You don't want to look in there. I do. Mm-hmm. So, but Mr. Vampire then in 1985, which was produced by Sammo, I think, sort of made everything click, you know, five-star way for the first time. And I think UK audiences were exposed to Mr. Vampire at least during the 90s at some point, because it was either the Made in Hong Kong VHS that brought it to life, or it was on TV. In like the early 90s. So, do you have any experience watching it on TV, either of you?
I didn't, but I think we did discuss it recently on the forums about, I think it was Mr. Vampire 2 made it way through Channel 4 at one point, or BBC 2.
I know back in the day, Channel 4 used to screen quite a few Kung Fu movies late night.
Mm-hmm.
They used to do a season of them and stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was there, if it was shown anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally never saw it on telly.
Yeah, it's always I always admired the first film though, because it's the one that tried the most, I think, to be technically accomplished as well. I mean, Ricky Lau was a cinematographer before, and if I'm not mistaken, the cinematographer on the likes of Encounters of the Spooky Kind, or Spooky Encounters. So it has like some well-shot scenes on the Golden Harvest sets. It's not like, you know, here's the camera, hop around, run about. It's a rather good-looking film. Not like the most well-directed films in terms of moving story or anything like that. It's not supposed to be that, but I think it's the most accomplished of the films. And my favorite sequel, though, if you just go by the name Mr. Vampire alone, is Mr. Vampire 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which has the advantage of having Richard as this sort of a Taoist priest con man, which I hope, I'd like to believe so anyway, was picked up upon by Peter Jackson when making Frighteners in 1997. Because those plot lines sort of echo themselves rather nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Michael J. Fox character had like ghosts working for him and faking like haunted houses and stuff like that. So I would like to believe Peter Jackson saw Mr. Vampire 3 at one point. If not, then the moves are still good on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, my name's Mike. I've been on a previous podcast on fire, and my favourite Lam Ching Ying movie is The Prodigal Son.
And switching gears slightly here when talking about the next essential Lam Ching Ying movie, a movie where he's really only a supporting actor, but it's a movie called School on Fire, directed by Ringo Lam in 1988. Not part of an actual connected series of movies, even though there was City on Fire and Prison on Fire. They were called that and were directed by Ringo Lam, and they were quite angry films. School of Fire being the utmost angry film that Ringo Lam has ever directed, and probably ever will. He won't be as angry anymore. Mainly a drama. It's about this young schoolgirl played by Fanny Yoon, who witnesses a triad beating, and after being pressured from cops and her teacher, she reports it, obviously. But a triad boss played by the character is called Rob Smart, is played by Roy Jung, he terrorizes her into paying unruly amounts of protection money. And Lam Ching Ying's role in all this is a police officer. Character name is Hoi. And this is a well-regarded film and a difficult film to watch on all levels, because Ringo Lam presents a social commentary where triads basically do what they like, and no one can oppose them without being basically penalized. The teachers can't oppose them, main one being Damien Lau, because the triad influence reaches his students, who are, you know, show no mercy against him, and the cops really are, they can't do anything either, because the triads are basically hanging out outside of school and recruiting. And it all comes to a really bloody climax eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And it is famous because this is obviously a very grave social commentary, and social commentary is not the best thing to do if you want to get past census. And School of Fire, I think, in some Asian territories played in like 60 or 70 minute versions, where when it's originally like a 90 minute film at least.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not just the really tough and gritty violence that the censors opposed to, it was the whole political aspects and social mm-hmm. commentary. Yeah, and it was a long time since I watched it, but Lam Ching Ying has, you know, I don't know if Painted Faces came first in terms of release being released, but it's a sight of him just being rather ordinary. It's an ordinary cop that gets fed up. And by this point, in my mind, he's quite such a presence that he can easily slip into this role if he has someone backing him, you know, with confidence. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Ringo Lam being a good director, not just for action, but for, you know, thriller and drama and such. So it's memorable. It's a totally memorable Lam Ching Ying film. And also be warned that it's not a pretty film to watch and an easy mm-hmm. film to watch. The climax, albeit censored, is still really difficult to watch. I think Ringo Lam's violence has never been this disturbing, and I read an interview with him where he said that he really put some extreme detail into creating this tough and gritty violence, and I mean that requires a good action director.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Lam Ching Ying worked on this as an action director, but whoever did a smashing job in terms of that.
Is there an uncut version available?
No, not as released anyway. There is talks of, well, it's going to be remastered by Joy Sales or Fortune Star, rather. They claim that, but if mm-hmm. they are going to go to the lengths of, you know, the Hong Kong version is cut by a few minutes, I would reckon. It's not like they cut out 20-30 minutes, but the Hong Kong version still has noticeable cuts in it. Then if Joy Sales and or Fortune Star are going to look for uncut footage, basically we won't know until the DVD is out. Yeah, because they might deem it a waste of time, even if it's hard to find or easy to find that footage. So the way you sort of notice that is obviously that there's arm choppings that, you know, look cut, but you hear it on the audio as well. At least on the Laserdisc, you can hear it on the audio, like the audio jumps. I remember one of the like the social commentary in it was a critique towards the British rule of Hong Kong, because they used not the national anthem in the background during some scenes, but there was some hymn of some sort that connects to, you know, Great Britain and stuff like that. So it was obviously a commentary directed towards the rule.
Hmm.
And it makes sense that after School on Fire, Ringo Lam made Wild Search, which is more mellow movie, because he must have worn himself out making this movie. And
mm-hmm.
Has any of you seen School on Fire?
Yep, I have the Joy Sales VCD.
Oh yeah, so it is on VCD. Yeah,
yeah, but. Oh, it's one of those films where after it, you're kind of like, damn. It's like you're taking back a step, but...
Do you remember now, if you saw it fairly recently, do you remember mm-hmm. the kind of music that played the sort of news that connected to Great Britain in a way. Do you remember what that was?
It was bagpipes. I remember, I think it was at the start and at the end, they used, it was sort of like a montage of people just walking. I think it was something like the leading lassie walking in the crowd, and there was bagpipes. I think it was a month or two since I've watched it, but I was talking to it, and basically I think I'm going to be sitting up tonight watching Prodigal Son again, Spooky Encounters, Painting Faces. I'm basically going to be up all night watching these movies.
But it was bagpipes definitely used at the beginning, and also during the climax, during one of the more violent bits.
And I want to talk about the ending bit so much, but it'd be spoiling it for the people that's not seen it. But when basically the final thing happens, it was one of those moments where you could just shout at your TV like, fuck yes, that person deserved that. Like, that person deserved to do that to him, and just like, justice is served.
Unfortunately, normally I don't say this, but this is a movie that for 100% certainly needs a remaster, because even on Laserdisc, the climax, you are missing out on so many details. Like, the beginning of the climax takes place at a club, and there's like people violently slashed to death. And the detail is not very good on Laserdisc and on the cinema print in general. So I hope, it's not like I want to see the violence, but obviously it's too much happening, especially on a VCD. You can't really see anything, and when people are moving about like they do, Damien Lau is great in that film too, playing not the common role for him at all. This really fed up teacher, and Roy June is a damn badass in this film. The worst of ways.
He always seems to make it, like, pull off the role of being a right bastard really well.
Unfortunately, he's like a fairly, you know, I've seen him in nice guy roles, and he does that well too. Roy Jung, but yeah, triad roles and Roy Jung, that's, you know, hand in hand. From the same year as School on Fire, we also have the next essential Lam Ching Ying movie, and it is Painted Faces, directed by Alex Law. And again, it's a supporting role. It's mainly Sammo's film, but they're well worth watching because it's the dramatic, like, reenactment of the what went on when Sammo Hung, Jackie Chan, and Yu Mu went into the opera school as kids, and the whole development that led them to what basically a movie stardom in a way. Sam Hung plays his real life master, Yu Yim Jun, and it's sort of a downbeat portrayal of an ancient art during its last dying breath, the ancient art being Peking opera. And Alex Law, the director, who along with his co-writer and I believe real life partner, Mabel Jung, the director of An Autumn's Tale, they may have had to tone down the actual strict the strict aspects of Yu Yun Jun's training, but it's still it really doesn't matter because it's still a touching film, and there's evidence of, you know, childish innocence allowed to be that before maturity enters, you know, in the students, and also as I said, the somber aspect of the Chinese opera being shifted aside in favor of a new, partly westernized era is very felt. And there's a symbolism in the film that I normally think is kind of hokey, but Sammo Hung has his bed actually is falling apart, and he places a turtle underneath the bed to make it balanced. You know, the turtle has a top shell, and it's sort of symbolic of what's going on there, and he has to let go. It's the ultimate message in there. And Lam Ching Ying appears a bit into the film as a friend of Sammo's, the Yu Yim Jun character, who is now a stuntman in presumably like the Shaw Brothers studios. Because the film, by that point, I think, is in the 70s, set in the 70s. And it's also something you don't want to reveal what goes on throughout Lam Ching Ying's performance, but I guess you described it well a few podcasts ago that he's probably received a few too many bumps on his head, on his head. And that's not leaning into a comedic thing at all. It's leaning into a very felt scene during the end of his performance in that film. And it's again Lam Ching Ying. You know, when he appears, he just appears and says hi to Sammo, and you don't think, oh no, the hopping vampire guy in a dramatic film, this won't work. It's he's immersed perfectly, just like Sammo is. I don't know, over the years of appearing in the background and eventually being a leading man, I guess these kind of characters, Sammo and Lam Ching Ying, they sort of felt comfortable and achieved veteran looks and veteran presence, and just it was easy for them. It was not like we need to go to drama school before then we can do this movie. And maybe that has to do with the picking opera background in a way, because they right. obviously needed to be performers in many ways. But I always liked that feeling when they are just so perfect for this dramatic part. And they are perfect for whatever comedy they do after this film too. And in another supporting role, Cheng Pei-Pei plays, I believe, I don't think she's ever named, but I believe it's a role tailored after Lam Ching Ying's real life master, Madame Fan Fok Fa. Because she plays a teacher of another Peking opera school, so it's possibly that character it's tailored on.
It's just again meshed in how basically the schools kind of were intertwined.
Exactly.
I haven't seen this, but I know that it was Lam Ching Ying's favourite film that he was in.
Right.
Little factoid for you there.
I don't think I know he didn't win, but I would be kind of surprised if he wasn't nominated for something. Sammo won Best Actor at the Hong Kong Film Awards for his performance. It was it would be a shame if Lam Ching Ying never received a nomination for something. But then again, award juries never, you know, rarely get anything right.
And again, this is one of these films, just like School on Fire, that's just been waiting for the DVD remaster.
Well, unfortunately, I know for a fact that the print is remastered, and it was about to be debuted on DVD by Celestial, because Shaw Brothers do own the home video rights after having another company co-produce it. But it was on a schedule, and then IVL stopped releasing DVDs. Because if you see like the Samuel L. Jackson documentary that he hosted, I don't know what that was called, but when they were talking about Jackie and Sammo being brought up in a strict Peking opera school, they showed a very nice looking clip from Painted Faces, obviously much more colourful and in widescreen for the first time, because the VCD and Laserdisc all were cropped.
Yeah.
So obviously it is there, and unfortunately it seems to be suffering that fate right now of being there.
Hi, I'm Mike Leader, the Hong Kong-based editor of Impact, and just to be awkward, my four favourite Lam Ching Ying movies are Prodigal Son, Painted Faces, Mr. Vampire, and a movie called Lover's Tear, starring Colin Chow, Nina Lee, and Lam Ching Ying as a deaf-mute assassin.
Okay, last on the list of essential Lam Ching Ying films is Magic Cop, which is a Stephen Tung-directed film from 1990. And it's about a former Hong Kong cop who's knowledgeable in wizardry and witchcraft, which Lam Ching Ying wasn't, because he actually didn't believe in ghosts or hopping vampires or any of that kind of stuff. Returns to the city to claim the body of a village girl suspected to be involved in a drug ring and apparently killed while evading the police. He decides to join two detectives assigned to the case after discovering that the girl had died 7 days prior to the police chase. And in this one, Lam plays Uncle Fung, Hong Kong cop.
Now, people always quoted this one. Well, I say people, I think probably one person said it, but they always mentioned it as...
Why do you assume that?
The modern-day version of Mr. Vampire.
Yeah. mm-hmm. modern day spin-off, really.
Right. Mm-hmm. Think it went under an alternative title of, I think, Mr. Vampire 6, but anything that looked similar to something else that was popular always had a retitle somewhere.
I mean, there's Lam Ching Ying and eyebrows in it, so... So obviously it's Mr. Vampire, whatever number they're up to. Saga 6, maybe they can name. Yeah. My first Lam Ching Ying movie.
Right. I always found this was one of the... When the Hong Kong DVD I picked up, it was funnily enough to have an English dub included on it. And it wasn't an international release, it was just the Hong Kong DVD.
Yeah, the
Megastar?
Yeah.
Yeah, Megastar did that occasionally. Unfortunately, they slightly fucked up that DVD by mixing it into 5.1. So there's like glass breaking sound really bad, but it only happens like 2 or 3 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was going to say,
Robbie, good.
A couple of Megastar Samo films. I've got the English dub on there as well.
Hmm.
Actually, is it Megastar who did the awesome data banks?
No, oh, that's me. Believe me, I fucking know. I'm writing reviews. And extras come in the form of Mayar's useless data bank and the trailer. That's my standard.
Copy and paste line.
Oh, what else is there to say? Look, we can print the plot synopsis from the back of the DVD on the DVD.
In case it's an illegal copy that doesn't have a case.
We've done you a favour.
But one of the things I liked about this movie, that the actual, I would say, bad guy in this movie was actually the Japanese actress Michiko Nakawashi, who I think people might remember as the muscular bodybuilder lassie from My Lucky Stars that Samo kind of takes it with a jab.
Yeah, I've seen that clip. It's not a long fight, isn't it? I mean, maybe she does some poses and stuff, but he just whacks her.
Yeah.
Really cartoony.
Not to be an anal turd or anything, but...
Well,
isn't that...
Well, you're about to.
Yeah, I'm about to be. Isn't that Michiko Nishiwaki?
Yeah.
Didn't you just say Nikiwashi?
I know, I've got the habit of saying Nick your washing, but it's the only way I could remember it.
Yeah, well, I just thought I'd point it out, because I mean, it doesn't bother me, but some people might, or you might, when you listen back, think, oh, I said that wrong.
No, just Michiko Nick your washing.
Okay.
If you have any complaints, write Stu at podcastonfire.com.
Yes. And what's the two cops in this movie that basically support Lam Ching Ying is Miu Kyi and I think
Wilson Lam.
I was just about to say Wilson Tong, but no, bad Stu.
That would be bad. But it would be kind of cool though, because Wilson Tong has not really played that role.
Mm-hmm.
Supporting cop characters, slightly wacky.
Hmm.
Rather stoic, I believe. That was one of the cops that really didn't believe in the witchcraft. And I always love Magic Cop for that, because the Miu Kyi character, who is slightly unwillingly used as a tool for Lam Ching Ying's witchcraft, in a good way, though.
Ken said tool.
No, I just know exactly what it means.
I was thinking in Swedish at the same time, and that it would have worked in Swedish, but he's used as a what's the word?
He was basically a dummy for him.
Yeah, exactly. There you go, a dummy.
A stooge.
But it was not like he was harmed or anything. He was a good effect to fight whatever the name of the Japanese girl was.
Mm-hmm.
And I always liked that relationship they had in that film, because he's more open to, you know, the
to believe in
that, to believe in Lam Ching Ying, and it's a, you know, it's not like it goes into drama or anything, but I kind of like the chemistry and the interplay, and UQI of course has, you know, he's exploded onto the Hong Kong scene again, older, wiser, has a more, you know, rugged face, a more veteran presence. He was in Brothers recently with Andy Lau and the other triad flick Woohoo.
Yeah,
it's fun to see him again. But yeah, Magical was my first Lam Ching Yee movie. Watched it on very poor VHS. The cinema print has very faded subtitles, so you could not see, could not follow it very well, but it really didn't matter because it's just a fun film with endless creativity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the opening scene to the final scene where they are fighting the zombie decaying kind of vampire.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was released in the UK on VHS, and it got a surprisingly low rating, I remember. Might have been a PG at the time, which surprised me because they...
I wonder if it included the... I always remember the one scene where it was... I think it was...
It was
cat. Mm-hmm.
There's animal cruelty in the film.
Yeah.
That it did not include, but otherwise, fairly low rating, which is part of it surprised me. The cover art is always cool because Lam Ching Ying is wearing a cop outfit on mm-hmm. the poster of that film, which was always cool. But it's a extremely fun film and one I return to often. And mm-hmm. it's the best of the spin-off sequels, if you will. It's the best of the movies that isn't called Mr. Vampire that had the Lam Ching Ying as the Taoist prince.
And it also includes basically the Hong Kong nearly stereotype badass bad guys with Billy Chow and Frankie Chan Chilung.
Ah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, the muscular Frankie
yes.
Chan.
Yes, the
not
big Frankie
with Prodigal Sons Frankie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Billy Chow and Lam Ching Ying had a fairly scrap. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just to back you up there, Ken, it was a PG. Magic Carpet of the UK.
Right, yeah, I remember that cover. So, I mean, it's not like it's bloodshed everywhere. It's, you know, it's probably along the lines of other Hopping Vampire flicks, but Mr. Vampire had a 15, and that may be due to, you know, there's some like wounds present in close up.
Yeah.
So I guess that's harsher, but yeah.
Well, the full 87 minute version was only a PG as well. The Magic Cop.
Hmm.
So, yeah, Stato here, I'm on the BBFC site. It got 11 seconds cut from the video release, which I'm guessing is the animal cruelty you mentioned.
Yeah.
Cat beans brand.
Yeah. So it was certified to be shown at the cinema on film, and that was just under 87 minutes, and that got a PG as well, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Is that even legal to show? Or did you say it was seemingly uncut when shown at the cinemas, but cut when going to video? Is that even legal?
Well, it's just saying here, the film version was 86 minutes 55 seconds, whereas the video version was 83 minutes and 18 seconds.
Right, that might be some speed issue. I don't know about that, but regardless. Mm-hmm. But as a BBFC aside, they do cut animal cruelty
mm-hmm.
from the cinema prints if there is... if there is such thing present, yeah?
Yeah. Right, I think we've actually ploughed through our essential Lam Ching Yang movies. So
there
I guess
more.
We could
there
move
are,
on.
That's so you can explore for yourself. So.
Mm-hmm.
I have many personal favourites mm-hmm. outside of these, but...
feel free to share.
Her Vengeance.
Right, yes. Where Lam Ching Yang, is it that he plays... I just could have used the term a cripple.
Yeah, he's wheelchair bound. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Rape Revenge thriller rather with Pauline Wong contains some of the most brutal shit ever filmed, and I think mm-hmm. that's the one where Lam Ching Yee was involved in the action. It's a really, really tough final reel to that film, and Lam Ching Yee is fighting in his wheelchair.
Yes, I love the on roof montage.
Billy Chow and Chung Wai, I believe, that the Pauline Wong and Lam Ching Yee has to face
mm-hmm.
face up. It's ooh, that film is tough.
Depressing.
So that's
yeah, that was one of those.
Sorry, I was going to say that's another entry in the micro subgenre of wheelchair kung fu.
In a way, but more mm-hmm. but they're more used like they set up traps before the final reel, like acid traps and stuff like mm-hmm. that, and Lam Ching Yee, it's a good dramatic performance in a way, though.
Yeah. Did the film ever get a decent DVD release, or was it always burnt in subs?
No, it's the problem, I think. The answer is no, but the problem, I think, the Fortune Star version of the film
is it cut differently?
It's cut and it's also edited differently. It's like another version of the film, but it lacks most of the tough violence that was present on the Megastar VCD.
Right, yeah.
I've actually done a comparison on my site, sogoodreviews.com, where people can look at it is almost a completely different version of the film. So if that comes to DVD by Fortune Star, I think unfortunately it's going to be that longer but neutered version of the film. Not Category 3 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame, of course.
One for me would be An Eternal Combat.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's the one which it was sort of a blind buy just because I had Lam Ching Ying and Joey Wong, who's famous for the Chinese Ghost Story trilogy.
Speaking of being typecast.
Mm-hmm. And from that film, I never really expected what I got, really. But it's like you get Anthony Wong, where he was at that stage where, like, you just came right out of the Category 3 film.
And well, it was a few years before Untold Story, but yeah.
He had the look of it.
Yeah, he had the look of it.
Yeah.
Still does.
Mm-hmm. And I had the greatest transformation of Lam Ching Ying being turned into a small dog, who in one shot basically flies from one side of the room to the other, biting Anthony Wong's ears. And
Well, wasn't that film a time travel element?
Yeah. I'm fucking struggling to remember this.
They got transferred from whatever dynasty they were into real life, and Lam Ching Ying ended up in a mental institution.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he was mad, but everyone else. Well, that mental institution wasn't really, you know, the patients could run amok as much as they'd like. And it was fun.
Mm-hmm. And also featured, I think it was either Park Man Wong or Taro Wong. And Sheng Fion.
They were
sort of like the sidekicks. They got stranded from Lam Ching Ying. So they were kind of going about the city trying to find their master. And he was obviously trying to find them, but he got caught up in the story with Joey Wong and Anthony Wong.
Right.
Because I think he actually comes in on like a movie set.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That is just one of those films where I could just watch that one over and over. I wouldn't put it down as a guilty pleasure because it's not really a bad movie.
It's one of those many that you either discover or you don't, and it's not really, you know, shameful to not discover it. You just one of many.
Mm-hmm.
Just so many to choose from. It's fun enough.
Mike, you don't got any underrated? Well, Lam Ching Ying movies you couldn't get to mention before, but you can now.
Well, I would mention, I mean, he only has a very small part, but I'd mention Pedicab Driver.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though he's only in it for a short while, I think he's excellent.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Really, just in a tiny bit of time he gets, he really adds something to the film. You know, not really in terms of the plot or anything, just kind of like texturally.
Mm-hmm.
The mood in it.
Because he owns something like a noodle stand that sort of is in the town centre.
Yeah,
he seems to sleep there as well.
Anyway, that should get a recommendation away because that film's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And also, just to kind of briefly as well, I was going to mention My Lucky Stars as well.
Right, yeah.
Because he's got... the end scrap in that is awesome, but he's got some bitching... fighting screen time in that one.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought of Magnificent Butcher as well, speaking of
a
good fight cameo. You know, he's the fan fighter.
Mm-hmm. And then he also has like knives that he manages to stick to his elbows.
Yeah.
That is a good fight scene between him and Yuen Biu.
That's about the only thing I remember from Magnificent Butcher, the Lam Ching Ying fight, because it's one of those, you know, jaw drop to the floor kind of thing, because it's so smooth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he looks so slick moving, and I don't know, I haven't you know, analyzed his fighting style or anything, but I just remember, at least in that film, he was very slick, and I guess that goes in line, you know, with the Peking Opera thing, you know, playing, again, feminine characters too.
Yeah.
It's very smooth, and not like a gritty fight in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so the wrong person to talk about martial arts and kung fu styles and stuff, but...
Mike, Phil!
I'm not the right person either.
Very bad.
So, moving on over to our plug-in for this episode, I've put a little bit of effort into it. So, for our plugs, we have LamChingYing.com, an amazing fan site based in Hungary. They've got everything. They really are the best place to go to if you're looking for facts, images, anything to do with LamChingYing. They have their own YouTube channel, which has things from, I'm guessing it was the Vampire Expert TV series. They have, I don't think it's subtitled, but they have all this footage, and it's great if you're just wanting to look at what stuff is like. And they're even hooked up on MySpace. We'll be posting... You could probably find links to these on their website, but if you can, we'll have them up on our one, which podcastandfire.com/forum. FareastFilms.com, formerly known as DragonsDenUK.com, they have an article entitled LamChingYing, Original Vampire Slayer and Underrated Action Hero. That's also worth checking out. LoveAsianFilm.com have a feature written about LamChingYing, which is also worth looking out. That was actually written by one of our forum members, Martin Cleary. And usual places, PodcastOnFire.com, SoGoodReviews.com, AsianBay.co.uk. And KungFuCinema.com. Why no? Toss them a bone. Ken?
I think I'll just keep it to SoGoodReviews.com because we have a few LamChingYing reviews on there. But otherwise, I think everyone should focus on that LamChingYing.com. I haven't been there, but I plan to go there now because it's, you know, anyone devoting that much time to LamChingYing and trying to be, you know, the most exhaustive source of information, mm-hmm. including getting clips from that late TV show. Respect. Kudos. Mm-hmm. So I'll keep it at that.
Mike?
Yeah, well, in a similar vein, I'm not even going to bother plugging. Seeing as this is a LamChingYing special, I think you should just get your ass over there and check out some more LamChingYing related shizzle.
Good stuff. Right. Well, I've been the host for this long, long, long night of podcasting. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Kenneth Bilson.
Mike.
And we'll catch you next time. Right, that's that bit recorded.
I had like a very poor joke about ATV, but I bit my tongue. It was shown on ATV. No, it was shown on many TVs.
Oh.
Alright. that popped up immediately in my head, and I was like, oh, I like that. I find that fun. No one
else. We could save that one for the members only section, maybe.
Here Kem tell crap joke.
Just write that down.
And, steal that, then I'm going to be alive at the party next time.